Underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester, Vermont, and Saratoga, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a master's degree in English with a concentration in literature studies and an MFA in creative writing. strose.edu/gradprograms.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. We talk about many types of books on this program. However, we only rarely focus on children's books. We've never featured children's book illustrators on the show. Well, that ends this week. We tell you about the Maurice Sendak Fellowship, established in 2010 as a residency program for artists who tell stories with illustration. The fellowship offers the time for artists to explore their craft outside the limitations of everyday life and in the relative isolation of a rural setting. This year's Sendak Fellows are Nora Krug and Harry Bliss. Harry Bliss is a New Yorker cartoonist and cover artist for the magazine. His self-titled panel, Cartoon Bliss, is syndicated in newspapers across the United States. His latest book as illustrator is Anna and Solomon. Nora Krug is the illustrator of the children's book My Cold Went on Vacation. She's the recipient of fellowships from the Guggenheim Foundation and Fulbright. Krug's story, Kamikaze, was included in the yearly Best American Comics. Her animated guide to Japanese business etiquette, How to Bow, was shown at the Sundance Film Festival. Krug is an associate professor in the illustration program at Parsons, the New School for Design in New York City, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Harry Bliss and Nora Krug to The Book Show. The audience making themselves heard, that's very nice. So we record this in Cambridge, New York at Bat and Kill Books, and this is where your fellowship is taking place, and it's a pleasure to have you both here. Thank you very much for being a part of our program. I appreciate it.
Nice Thank to
you.
Be here.
Thank you very much. So Nora, let us begin with you. You have a lot of fellowships to your credit, and I know this is the most important one, and you know that Fulbright and Guggenheim thing, well, yeah. So what is it like to do this kind of thing and to have the time to do the work that you want to do?
It's really great. I mean, this is, I think, the first residency I've been part of. The other fellowships were more economic ones, where you get a certain amount of money and then that allows you to just spend time working at home. But the great thing about this residency program is that you're really working in an entirely different environment in the countryside, in this beautiful setting of Maurice Sendak's farm. It just allows you to just focus on the projects you want to work on and also to talk to the other fellows. In this case, this year, the other one fellow and exchange ideas. And it's been great.
How was it to be that fellow, Harry?
It's great. I echo Nora's sentiments totally. And I can't say enough about being on the farm and having Nora, you know, around too. Because basically what I do is I'm in Maurice's former house where he used to live. And I stay there. And then at the end of the day, after I do all my work, I come down and I sit with Nora by the pond. And we have a little glass of wine. And I look at what she's doing and talk to her about stuff. But minimal interaction. But the interaction that we do have is very fruitful, actually, yeah.
Was it always your intention to illustrate in some way?
Well, my parents met in art schools, and I come from a family of artists. Yes. There are like 9 or 10 of us. So I never thought of art or illustration as a career or as a means of making a living. It was just something that was in the air. And I think in large part it was also an escape from whatever was going on in our upstate New York, lower middle class neighborhood, which could oftentimes be pretty unpleasant. So art, just like writing or music or anything else, was an escape. But it was everywhere in my family. We were all, you know, if you couldn't tell the difference between a Andy Warhol drawing or a Ben Shawn drawing, you were beaten with a pussy willow branch. So I'm not kidding, Joe.
You know, that's a phrase you just don't hear enough in life. Nora, as far as your artistic inclination, at what point did you zero in and say, okay, I can do this for a living?
I think relatively late. I mean, I always loved looking at children's books. I grew up with Maurice Sendak's books and also illustrators like Tommy Ongerer. And so I always had a strong interest in illustration, but I didn't know until quite late that it's an actual profession that, like Harry said, that you can actually hopefully make a living with it. And so for me, I always was interested in a whole variety of different things. And I think my main goal always was to tell stories. And for me, it was never so much about the medium of illustration or the act of drawing as an activity, but more about learning a tool to tell stories. And so I initially actually started out studying set design. And so I developed sets for musical and theater performances. Then I went and I became a designer for the music field. And then I studied documentary film. And so I was really kind of all over the place. But for me, it was always about telling stories. And it wasn't until I got my MFA in Berlin, in Germany, that I realized that illustration was a medium I just felt very comfortable using. And decided that I wanted to go further with that. But, you know, for me, it's always been about telling stories, not so much about a particular medium.
So when you fill out that form that we all have to fill out at some point in your life where it says occupation, do you put down illustrator? Is that the one word that sort of describes what you do?
Yes, by now that's what I do, yeah.
Harry, is it a little bit different for you? Is it cartoonist? Is it illustrator?
I say cartoonist, yeah. But that's interesting because I think that... Nora, you are like a storyteller. I consider you more of a writer, even though your illustrations are beautiful. But I think that, is that true? I mean, do you think of yourself as, I mean, since you're a storyteller, would you be considered a writer first?
I wouldn't say first.
By the way, I'd like you to meet my co-host.
Sorry.
That's fine.
I always wanted to be Joe Donahue.
I want you to take on the show. That's good.
So, am I allowed to?
No, of course. Okay. No, you're both. You're allowed to answer, and by God, you're allowed to ask questions.
What was I going to say? No, I wouldn't say I'm a writer first. I mean, for me, the process, as is probably true for you, really happens simultaneously. When I write with just words, I always simultaneously think about the images I'm going to add at a later point. And I take notes on what these images will be, though I often don't start drawing them until the writing is really... until I have the narrative down. I always felt like there should be a term that's basically the equivalent to singer-songwriter. I don't know, maybe there is, illustrator.
Well, author, illustrator, right?
Yeah, probably that's the term. But so I think, yeah, for me, it's really something that happens simultaneously.
I find it fascinating in your work, Nora, because there is text. There is often in your work, there is a lot of text. And as Harry mentioned, that you're telling a story through that, and it is the illustration. So you have very much the idea of what you're trying to convey with the language as well as the image.
That's true. Although I've also published a wordless graphic novel, which is, I think, a whole different way of telling stories, a different kind of challenge. If you don't have any words, you have to convey meaning just in the images, and the images have to communicate, what you want them to say. But yeah, even in my single image illustrations, I often integrate text also as a graphic element. I like to combine both as a graphic unity, basically, text and image. I'm very interested in all Japanese woodblock prints that do that as well. So yeah, I think a lot about the relationship between text and image, and for me, they don't really exist as separate entities. I also feel like, I mean, we perceive the world in images and words. So for me, it's a very natural thing to convey my perspective on the world in images and words as well. You know, I think it would feel too limited for me to just do that with one medium and without the other.
Now, Harry, you, as a cartoonist, obviously there is the caption. Is that difficult for you to write, or do you start with that often?
Well, I think at this point what I do is I just keep my ears open for funny little excerpts of what people say. So my brain now, from working for the magazine for 15 years, is sort of trained to pick up these little pieces of wording that somehow will influence a cartoon. But sometimes the actual caption takes weeks or months to sort of hone in on. And I'll send it out to friends. Like, I had one idea for a cartoon. Well, I'll give you an example, Joe. I was on the beach in Costa Rica, and our friend was walking along with us, us being my wife and I. And our friend was talking about taking Prozac. His doctor was prescribing Prozac. And my wife just said, "Wow, Prozac, you're kicking it old school, aren't you?" Right?
That's great.
Isn't that kind of funny?
Yes.
Because Prozac's so old school as an antidepressant. So I thought that would be funny. So I took that. I mean, Zoloft is all the rage. So I took that little snippet, and then I did a drawing of a pharmacist accepting the script from the patient, and the pharmacist just says, "Wow, Prozac, kicking it old school, aren't you?" So I'm constantly, trying to listen for those little gags in our language all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I've noticed that when we, go out for lunch or something, that you always...
Prozac?
Yes, that too. Actually, so when he's awake, he usually picks up sentences and takes notes for the next cartoon.
When you think of the cartoon or that idea of the Prozac idea, so then is the illustration more natural? Is that easier once you have the idea, because you have the skill to be able to have that pharmacist with that piece of paper?
Yeah, the hardest part for me is the idea. Is somehow conveying this little piece of mirth or humor. That's the most difficult thing to come up with. Making the drawing, doing the art is, it extends that even further by a little gesture, maybe the raise of an eyebrow on the pharmacist's face or something. But the drawing is pretty, at this point in my life, is pretty effortless. It's pretty easy to do. I owe much of that to The New Yorker, because when I first started working for the magazine as a cartoonist, it forces you to go from just work directly from your mind right down to your arm and put it on paper. You really don't have time to gather reference or do anything. It's pure drawing straight down. And since then, I've gotten really good over the past 15 years at getting that drawing on paper, conveying that idea visually.
As I mentioned in the introduction, you do cover art for the magazine as well. So how does that work? Do you get longer to do that, or do the ideas come differently? Because it's in color, but it's also bigger and it's more important. It's the cover of the magazine.
It's a pain, Joe, It's because I have two different editors. I have Bob Mankoff is my editor for cartoons, and Francois Smouli is my cover editor at the New Yorker. And they're both brilliant people. And getting work accepted for The New Yorker is you have to deal with a great deal of rejection. It's like a 90% rejection rate. So for every 30 cover sketches I do, maybe one will get selected. And
that's a lot.
It's a lot of work. Sometimes it's spec work, but for the most part, I'm contracted with them. So they sort of have to buy a certain amount of work over the course of the year. But covers are extremely difficult. Hardly ever do we get instances where they request something like, we need a cover for this or we need a cover for that. They just send out a calendar and you pick and choose which dates you want to do, Easter, whatever the date is, Washington's birthday. But in some instances, when there's a news story breaking, where Osama bin Laden was killed, they will request covers immediately. And there's another cover artist, Barry Blitt, who's a friend of mine. And we always get mistake Barry for me, because my name's Harry Bliss and it's Barry Blitz.
So. Barry Blitz. Yeah.
And at this point, I was telling Nora earlier, when people come up to me and say, "Oh, I really liked your Obama, Michelle fist bump cover," and before I say it's Barry, I said, "Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that."
What is it about The New Yorker that makes that special? Not only for cartooning, but for illustration. It seems to be one of those last vestiges of where we can go to see that type of art.
Well, it's the only magazine that I know of that features art every week on the cover, and it has since 1925. I think the only time they used a photograph, and it was a Photoshop photograph, was the Monica Lewinsky photograph. Makes me laugh. They did a little version of Did you guys see that? It was the Mona Lisa, but it was Monica Lewinsky. Yeah. It's funny. And there's just a ton of art in there. You have the Talk of the Town. So there's a different art director for the Talk of the Town art, a different art director for, I believe, the fiction. Sometimes they'll use illustration for fiction. And it's, you know, I think it's the only magazine for cartoons these days. You know, back in the day, you had a bunch of different magazines that featured cartoons, Collier's, Saturday Evening Post. And now it's just Playboy and The New Yorker. And let's face it, Heth is, you know, I don't know how much longer that guy's got. You know, he's got. We give him all the Viagra in the world. And can we say Viagra on the radio?
Yeah.
Okay.
Nora, I'm curious as to when Harry describes his work, would you like a deadline? I mean, obviously you have deadlines, but different. It isn't that it has to be done. This has to be submitted by Tuesday.
It really depends on the client. I mean, I used to do a lot of editorial work where I had, you know, very strict deadlines, obviously, because you can't just leave the illustration out of the page. And especially with the New York Times, because it's a daily paper, when I used to do a lot of work for the Abed page of the New York Times. And that's particularly challenging because you usually get a call from the art director around 11 o'clock in the morning. They ask you if you're available, then they send you the yet unedited article that's to be illustrated. Then you have a couple of hours to come up with a series of sketches and send them over. Then they discuss this with the editors for, you know, I mean, usually it takes about an hour to hear back. And then you have another 2 hours to do the final. So that's 4 hours total, you know, coming up with the ideas, reading the article, coming up with the ideas, making sketches, sending them off, and then doing the final. But I've always liked these challenges because they really make you nail down an idea as precisely as you can. And often you only have a small amount of space, and yet the articles are about the biggest issues in the world. I mean, wars, you know. And you have to really think of ways of conveying these ideas in a very simple, efficient way. So in that sense, I do like deadlines. With my longer-term projects, it's different. I mean, right now I'm working on a 350-page written and illustrated book. I have a deadline for that too, but obviously that's going to be a couple of years down the line. Then, of course, you have just more freedom to experiment and really think about what it is you want to say and how you want to say it.
Each of you, I mentioned that you have taken on projects of illustrating the works of others. So how, give us a sense of how those collaborations have taken place, where an author will say, this is my work and I would like you to illustrate it.
Well, in my case, most of the manuscripts come through my agent. Yeah, I mean, my agent will get a manuscript from any number of publishers, and she knows me by now and my sensibilities, and as does the editor who has the manuscript in hand. And if they're looking for maybe a little humor in the art, I should say my agent always kind of looks for something sort of profound in the text. I don't know how else to describe it other than that, but...
We'll use Anna and Solomon as an example.
Well, Anna and Solomon is a different story, because that is actually a manuscript that I pitched, an idea that I pitched. That was a story that my mother-in-law told me over dinner one night in Burlington, Vermont, where we live. And it's an immigrant tale about how her grandparents came to the States. And I found the story really compelling and beautiful and selfless. And I said to Elaine Snyder, my mother-in-law, this is just fantastic. We should make a book together. It didn't take long. You know, I eventually, you know, sent it to my agent, and FSD eventually picked it up. But that's a rare case. In fact, that's never happened before, where someone has told me a story and I thought, this would be a great book. Let's make this happen. Normally, all the manuscripts come through my agent.
Is it different when it's personal?
Hell yeah, it's my mother-in-law, man. What are you kidding me? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a big deal. Yeah, I mean, I really felt like, yeah, I was personally attached to the story. You know, it's a beautiful story. So I really wanted to do right by her.
Nora?
Not that I didn't want to do right by the other. That sounded weird. I'm sorry.
No, you will.
Sorry,
you
Doreen Cronin and Sharon Creech and all the other authors. Just, you know.
As I mentioned, the book you illustrated most recently, My Cold Went on Vacation. So how did that collaboration come about?
That was really collaboration between a friend of mine, Molly Rausch, and myself. And basically, I think I had a cold one day, and then I was just thinking about how, funny or interesting it would be for a child to imagine a cold traveling from person to person and from country to country and continent to continent, which is really what happens, but to basically show the character of the cold as a little figure. And so we both got excited about writing, you know, a story and creating a book around that. And so she wrote the story, and I made a few illustrations. And the way it works in the children's book world is that you sketch out the entire book in small, you know, images and provide a few final illustrations and the story. And then you send that to publishers, and they either, you know, buy it or not. It's my understanding that publishers usually prefer to combine the writer and the illustrator themselves to make that decision themselves, and that they don't like it as much when a team of, you know, writer and author already approaches them with an idea. And that's what we did, but we were able to sell it to Putnam, which is a division of Penguin. And then, yeah, we had another, I think, 4 months to finish it. And it was nice. I mean, I think in the ideal case scenario, the writer and the illustrator really impact each other. And it's kind of, it's a collaborative process. And sometimes, you know, the images or the text change based on what the other person is working on, because you don't want one to repeat the other, obviously.
We're just about out of time, but I'm interested in hearing from you both as Marie Sendak fellows. And we're talking about illustration of what Marie Sendak has meant to you. You mentioned Nora as a mentor.
Yes, I, as I mentioned, I grew up with his books. I think they were probably together with Tommy Ungerer's books, who's a great Alsatian children's book illustrator. And I think they were friends. One of my biggest influences as a child, the book that fascinated me most, and now I don't know the title in English, you probably know, the one about the baby that's stolen.
Outside Over There?
Yes, Outside Over There, which really scared me as a child because it's about a baby sibling being stolen by these faceless creatures and replaced with a replica made of wax, I believe, or ice, yes. Right, because the fake baby begins to melt, which was one of the most horrifying images, but really fascinating at the same time. And I, now looking back as an illustrator, I really appreciate that Sendak was one of the few illustrators, children's book illustrators, who dared to talk about subjects such as death. And I think that's just not done enough anymore these days. You know, most children's books are really just cute and funny. And I think he was really, he really contributed a lot. And I think it's a very, very important thing to do.
He was, I got to meet him, I think, once. I spent a few hours with Maurice. And then I spoke with him on the phone a few times. You know, he was such a brilliant artist. And the last time I met with him, I saw what he was working on, and we'd spoken about different things. I grew up with Mickey in the Night Kitchen. That was the book. That was the seminal book for me. But when I met Maurice, we had connections about depression and dysfunctional families and all sorts of things, and kind of griped about the situation of the world. But then when I went into his studio and I saw what he was working on, the pieces that were on his desk, these sort of just gorgeous little gem-like watercolors that were sort of inspired by William Blake and the music that he was listening to, it really knocked me out. I couldn't believe it. You know, I went back to my studio and it kind of re-inspired me, because I was at a point in my life before then where I'd kind of had it with illustration, especially children's books. I'd reached a kind of a low point, but he meant a lot to me. Just his, that meeting was amazing. I just think he was just a brilliant, I can't say enough about him. I mean, words can't express what a great artist he was, you know.
Harry Bliss and Nora Krug are this year's Sendak Fellows. Nora Krug and Harry Bliss, thank you so much for being with us on the book show. I appreciate it.
Thanks,
Joe. Thank you.
We enjoy hearing from our listeners about the show. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can also listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. This program was recorded at a live event at Battenkill Books in Cambridge, New York. www.battenkillbooks.com. Thanks to Connie Brooks for her production assistance. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening. For The Book Show, I'm Joe Donahue.